Blog Talk Radio.
And she'll always get the best of me, the worst is yet to come. But at least we'll both be beautiful and stay forever young. This I know, this I know. She told me don't worry about it. She told me don't worry no more. We both know we can't go without it. She told me you'll never. Best of me, at least we'll both be numb. And she'll always get the best of me, the worst is yet to come. All the misery was necessary when we're deep in love. Cause I know, cause I know, girl I know. She told me don't worry about it. She told me don't worry no more. We both know we can't go.
Hello and welcome to Late Nights with the Midnight Bomber with Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. Pour it out thick like honey, bittersweet like molasses, seeking your proliferous journey to profit to the empathetic masses, calling on cathartic release, expel your demons, if but for a moment increase then cease them, quell their influence, let them not commit treason. Now this week's focus is on prompts by a Ukrainian artist called Oleg Shubliak. And we have a full board tonight of some great poetry. And whilst it is not a prerequisite, we do encourage you to join the Late Night Poets group on allpoetry.com. And how are you tonight, Captain?
I am splendid. Thank you for asking. How are you? You sound marvelous, as they used to say.
Yeah. Well, we're currently in lockdown in Sydney at the moment. We've had a bit of a COVID flare-up, and I've been doing a household clean-up. So just getting – I think that seems to be the go-to for everyone who's in lockdown.
What's your favorite word? That's cathartic.
Yes, that's it.
When you finish, you can come help me because I got an entryway full of cardboard boxes that I've been trying to split all day, but I've been distracted by poetry.
Oh, no.
Well, the count now is poetry 3, boxes nothing.
That's hilarious. That's pretty much – I've had to make a spot on the bed around the stuff that I still have to organize, but I'm slowly getting there.
I call that a sleep around.
That's it. And Mika, are you with us tonight?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you girls doing?
Yeah, not bad, not bad.
Not bad. You sound great.
Thanks,
yeah,
you too.
I think finally, I think we're all together, the three amigas or the coven. It's been a while to coordinate the three of us, but we're here.
But, you know, it's like a three-legged stool with one leg missing. It kept falling over.
That's it. And Mika, do we have anyone on the lines tonight?
We do. We have area code 816, and you are on the air, area code 816. Who are we speaking with?
This is Randy G. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Randy.
Hi, Randy.
Hi, Randy.
Hey.
Yeah, talk to you again, Bobby.
Yeah, how about that? We got to stop a meeting like this.
Well, Randy, I put your poem on the board. You're first up when you're ready.
All right.
Ooh.
My poem is Eye of the Beholder. I made myself comfortable in my old favorite chair. It's my special place to read, escaping life's despair. Looking forward to fanciful adventure in great detail. Launching me on a journey as a ship being set sail. Perhaps a thriller the sinister character's all about. His twisting plots that confuse, keeping me in doubt. And anchored it to my seat as I try to solve the case. Sensing the author's stare, I can almost see his face. As if he's leading me through a tale of lover's rage, believing his eyes are on me as I turn every page. Riveting me in place, though I'm scared, I get bolder, despite feeling that he's looking over my shoulder. The intensity of this put me on edge, but I read, and drove me to devour everything the author said. I read it aloud, not only seen, it needed to be heard, all the while seeing the author's face in every word in Paul.
Great read.
Thank you, Randy. It was, wasn't it? And, Captain, I'll get you to make the first comment for tonight.
Okay. I thought this was wonderfully imaginative interpretation of the selected prompt. He envisioned the author of the book being read by the girl as having inhabited the favorite chair, the favorite armchair, and which I thought was quite creative. I made myself comfortable in my old favorite chair. It's my special place to read Escaping Life's Despair. By the way, I really hate you because you make the rhyming seem so effortless. This is beautifully done. Perhaps it's a thriller with sinister characters all about. It's twisting plots that confuse, keeping me in doubt. Sensing an anchor to my seat as I try to solve the case, sensing the author's stare, I can almost see his face. Rather than attempt to decode which famous personage was depicted in the artwork, you cleverly assigned an entirely new personality to the face. And I thought that was just brilliant.
Thanks, Bobby.
Welcome.
And Amika, what did you think?
Oh, I loved it. Great read and great comment too, Bobby. I just like the way that it reminds me of the speech in The Neverending Story, where he's like, have you ever been Captain Nemo?
Yes.
And you have, and he talks about how you have the escape of shutting the book, but that the book, The Neverending Story, doesn't have that same escape. And that's how I felt reading this. It's like, it's something that you don't have the escape. It was almost like, I hate to pull in another reference, but like the Telltale Heart, you know, here you are, as I turn every page, riveting me in place, I'm scared I get bolder, despite feeling that he's looking over my shoulder. So it's almost like that kind of book that that there is no escape from, and it almost becomes a ritual as you are urged to read it aloud. I don't know, I thought it was really cool.
Great comment, very perceptive.
Thanks, Kika.
Yeah, look, I thought it was a great take on the prompt. And what better way to escape life's despair than by immersing yourself in a book? And I think if an author truly captivates you, it is indeed, as you put it in this fine example of Ekphrastis, the rhyming structure gives the poem a gentle flow, as Bobby mentioned. And I found it was kind of like a story about a story of... exactly what Mika was saying about the never-ending story there, similar concept. And journeying to distant lands or experiencing emotions and feelings without leaving one's armchair is such a gift. And I truly envy those that can focus on reading a book cover to cover. Very immersive.
Great comment.
All right. Now... I'm not sure, but I Love Poems, or Sawa, said she was going to call at some point, so I'll just hold off on her poem for now, and we'll get Tiller up next. And Captain, would you like to give this one a read, please?
Okay, I see the Tiller's work up. Is that the one you wanted read?
Yes, please.
Okie dokie. Just want to make sure. Okay, we have, let me tee this up. Ooh, okay, we have Mind Boggling by Tila. Upon an impressionist painting of a wheat field emerges the famous self-portrait of Vincent van Gogh. Oleg Shupliak, a master of painters too, like his Dutch counterparts, a Ukrainian born a superb artist. Each picture of his masterpiece a mind-boggling. A superb way one would like to borrow Oleg's mind just for one day to see how he thinks. So cleverly drawn, one never thinks about the first place, but Oleg cleverly drew a smoky eyebrow on a chimney underneath his eye, a tiny house. On a bridge of the nose, he drew a second, Vincent van Gogh wearing a khaki hat, a little bit kind of Mexican and all white turning back. How can that be possible? It's a superb artist like Oleg Shupliak. Well, that's not enough. He turned poor Vincent van Gogh's ear into a beautiful lady with a lovely pink hat and lovely blue dress. Some painters are born genius. Wish them all the best, and many more out there we can appreciate and admire. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. Great read. And Randy, would you like to make the first comment?
Yeah, sure. This was, I thought, a very clever piece. He does a bit of a tribute to Vincent van Gogh as well as Oleg, but... you know, Oleg's pictures are extremely interesting in how he incorporates faces into landscapes or out of landscapes and other situations. And I like the way that he incorporated all of that into this poem. The lady in the ear, the Mexican-looking attire in the nose. So I found it to be very interesting and entertaining, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Randy. I agree with you there. I think if you weren't looking at the image of Oleg Shupriev's artwork, it would likely come off as quite an abstract poem. But I think Tiller has captured and unpacked the imagery contained within the artwork very well in the prose poetry. It was very observational and informative, with a reverential twist towards the artist Oleg Shupriak, but also Vincent van Gogh as well. And, Captain, what did you think?
This is a very fine interpretation of the prompt, and I like the juxtaposition of Vincent van Gogh's work with Oleg Shupriak's. I think this was written with a very keen eye and an appreciation for attention to detail, and it's pointed out so wonderfully well in the observations of the nose and of the ear and the hidden figures in the painting. So I think this is it's a very well done.
Thanks, Captain. Great comment. And Mika, what were your thoughts?
I really liked it as a tribute, as Randy said. I'd never seen this picture, but I really like the way that she approached the different illusions that are in it. Talking about, well, that's not enough. He turned poor Vincent van Gogh's ear into a beautiful lady with a lovely pink hat and lovely blue dress. I love that because it's got that touch of humor to it as well, because poor Vincent van Gogh never could have his ear turned into a hat or something. I don't know, that cracked me up.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And also, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was the artist who shaved his ear off. So, and I don't know if my backstory is right, but I think it had something to do with a lady love. So to actually incorporate that into the artwork also is quite macabre and thought-provoking at the same time.
And what's really impressive is Van Gogh did it to his left ear. So, of course, the painting depicts the left ear with the lady love's hat there. So that's very clever. Again, a wonderful attention to detail.
There we go. Well, I'll get the next poem up. So this one's by Theo Onik, and I'll give this one a read. And it's called Mask or Facelift. I wonder whose face are you wearing, as I am always wearing my own. Never a take in the hands of a destiny decided by strong women or big men. I wonder where that face of yours comes from. What does it mean to other worlds, as my face is still wearing with pride the importance of a life lived well? I wonder, how does your face look? Which masks are you willing to wear? What are the grounds of your decisions? Which decisions were yours, which were mine? I wonder, when will we get just enough with it? This change in hearts and facelifts to please a world that can't be forgiving, either you're pretty or ugly, not telling the difference between the rich and the poor. End poem. And Mika, would you like to make the first comment on this poem?
I'm sorry, can you come back to me?
Certainly can. I'll make the first comment. There's an unhealthy fascination with beauty ideals in society, and I think Theo has stated the attainment of these ideals is largely to an extent to do with affluence or a lack thereof, or just very good genetics. That could be the case. And they say that the lines on the face show character, but they also influence how you are perceived before even opening your mouth, at least for some. And the ideas that the protagonist asks are thought-provoking, particularly the reference to mask wearing. I think everyone wears a mask to a certain extent, especially at the moment, and very few have the luxury of saying and doing whatever they want to whom they want. Each of us is beholden to someone. And Captain, what did you think?
I thought there was a very strong thread of philosophy woven throughout the piece. And like you said, it highlights the human fascination with the exterior. The first thing we see on people before we really get to know, or we get to know who they really are, the person within. And I wonder how does your face look? Which masks are you willing to wear? What are the grounds of your decisions? That is very astute questioning here. I think it's very evocative to the reader, makes them wonder, you know, is this something that I do, or who do I know that does this? Because everybody does. We have, and within ourselves, we have so many different personalities. The one we show other people, the one we show the people we love, the one we show ourselves. And we love to tell ourselves stories about what we think we're projecting. So this is a beautifully written about the duplicity of the human personality.
Great observation, Captain, there. And Randy, what did you think?
Yeah, I also thought this was a wonderful piece and a deep look at human nature. I was also fascinated by the same lines that Bobby read there. I wonder, how does your face look? Which mask are you willing to wear? What are the grounds for your decisions? Because no matter, we all at times wear different hats in life and different masks for different situations. And also, we may bend over backwards and try to be fair and not prejudice in any way in any situation. But we all, unfortunately, have some prejudices, even if we try to suppress them, and they may be minor. And I think of when I was a hiring manager, almost always when I was going to interview somebody, before I ever heard a word they said, I saw them first. So my first impression was based on what they look like, what they were wearing, everything else. So, we are heavily influenced by what we see. And and unfortunately, sometimes by what others think. So I thought it was a pretty...
Thanks, Randy. That was a really good comment. And Randy, I'll just ask you, are you going to hang around for a bit longer or do you need to jet? It's up to you.
I will, another 15 minutes or so probably.
Hooray!
Awesome. Glad to have you. And Mika, did you want me to pick you up now or the next poem?
Yeah, I should comment on this one. I really love this poem. Theo Onuk always has a lot of layers to her writes. I really like that, and how much thought she puts into her word choices. I wonder, whose face are you wearing, as I am always wearing my own. Just that beginning, I think, is very evocative. It draws us in. And then... I agree with a lot of Bobby's comments, especially at the last stanza. This change in hearts and facelifts to please a world that can't be forgiving, either you're pretty or ugly, not telling the difference between the rich and the poor. I feel like the idea that, you know, there's anything you can do to escape this judgment, this kind of hierarchy that you're in based on your looks, is farcical, and that's, I think, what she's calling out there.
I think you're right there, Mika. And look, I don't know, it is a female-centric commenting board tonight, as most weeks it is, but I seem to think that there's a disparity between how it affects men and women also, not just the rich and the poor.
Yeah.
And with that, I will move on to the next poem. And Randy, did you want to give this one a read?
Sure. This is Burbling My Madness with audio and answer and author's notes.
Don't worry about that part. That's fine. There's no audio. Yeah.
By Jaskaran. When I descended on Earth, everyone thought of me to be an ice cream feast, pouring hot fudge, nuts, whipped cream, reveling behavior. But I was like a caged bird, thinking of the moon as it sits there all alone, a tree monster. In my mind, turbulence caused my cold winter storm, baby blooms nipped in the bud, the wind spiraling above, whipping up the scarred ashes in my heart. Blackbirds perched upon frozen twigs, bursting into a choir, seeing the early morning sun. My scrambled words turn into notes, and blood-stained letters camouflage into music while you are asleep. These poems tear themselves from my journals and gather around you as a thick blanket of snow snuggles the flower's bed with a winter wrap. You, my darling, revel in my madness in poem.
Thank you, Randy. That was a great read. And Captain, would you like to make the first comment?
Yes, so my first comment is, wow, this is really quite the dense read here. There's a lot going on in four stanzas. When I descended on Earth, everyone thought of me to be an ice cream feast. Interesting, but I was like a caged bird thinking of the moon as it sits there all alone. A tree monster. An interesting description of the moon. I guess if you view it through the trees, it would look monstrous. And it's just in my mind, turbulence caused by cold winter storm. This is, it's so layered, and the metaphors are so well constructed. In my heart, blackbirds perch upon frozen twigs. And the ending, as a thick blanket of snow snuggles the flower beds. And he talks about the poems tearing themselves from his journal and gathering around his beloved. This is a very complex piece that really merits several read-throughs to really appreciate it. But just in my first read-through, I find it very impressive.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great comment. And my apologies, Jaskaran. I just realized there was a recording. So we'll endeavor to get your recordings played in the future. That was just my bad there. As far as my comment is concerned, it was certainly a fast-paced stream of consciousness that was written here with the bard as muse, I believe. And I believe that's prompt five. And I was like a caged bird thinking of the moon. I feel the claustrophobia of these lines. And then you've got it juxtaposed with the expansiveness of blackbirds perched upon frozen twigs bursting into a choir, seeing the early morning sun. I think even if we are caged in the dark cover of night, the sun will eventually rise, and with it the call of the birds will start, and the warmth of the sun will irradiate one's heart. It was a very reflective and in turn self-reflective piece of poetry. And my favourite part, I believe you just mentioned, Captain, was while you are asleep, these poems tear themselves from my journals and gather around you. Very well done.
That is a great line.
Isn't that fantastic? It's very evocative, I believe.
It is, I agree.
And Randy, what did you think?
Well, I found this to be extremely interesting, and of course, I'm reading it for the first time and trying to get through it. I'm sure I butchered up the tempo. It would have been nice to hear the author read it themselves, because I think it probably had a very unique flow to it that I was having trouble capturing. But it has an edgy flavor to it and a slightly dark feeling about it. And I particularly like the, in my mind, turbulence caused my cold winter storm, baby blooms nipped in the bud, the wind spiraling above, whipping up the scarred ashes in my heart, blackbirds perched upon frozen twigs, bursting into a choir, seeing the early morning sun. That is very interesting and thought-provoking. I thought it was a really good poem. I liked it.
Thank you, Randy. Great comment. And Mika, what did you think? What were your thoughts?
Oh, man, it's hard for me not to go to the same exact place that you and Bobby were going to with the While You Were Asleep, These Poems Tear Themselves from My Journals and Gather Around You. It reminds me of, like, the one person that got away, the way that maybe they don't contact you forever, you never hear from them again, but because they affected you so strongly, the things that you write are speaking to them, and maybe they can avoid thoughts of you all the time, but not from your poems when they're asleep and vulnerable. And there's something that transcends and gives them the message. I don't know if it's necessarily just the one that got away or just in general someone you feel very strongly about. Maybe you, like, strongly hate them, or whatever it is that inspires you to write about them is communicated while they sleep. I don't know. I just thought that was a really cool line.
Great comment. That was a really interesting interpretation, too. And Mika, if you don't mind, would you be able to give Pink Fairy Five's poem a read?
Oh, yeah, it would be an honor. Okay, so this is called Oleg Shupriak's John Lennon. Oleg Shupriak's imagination is a gift. Few can imitate. Many cannot comprehend. I am amazed by his technique. Light, dark, yin-yang, and a little extra to keep his viewer on her toes. It was difficult to choose a favorite. They are phenomenal paintings. Angel, monk, John Lennon, heaven, earth. Brilliant to combine a cherub's pristine purity with a monk's robust red robe of life. The unassuming, humble guitar player represents John Lennon maybe as well as anything. And a word imagine brings this painting up to perfection. End poem.
Thank you, Mika. I thought it was a great piece of reverential poetry. And it just strikes me that Pink Fairy Five has a talent for these kind of contests and anything where a person or an individual or a group is identified and highlighted. And it focused on the musings of Oleg Shupriak and also the interesting aspects of the artwork. And I think Pink Fairy Five has captured that fascination and the imagery of the artwork very well in this write. And Randy, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought it was a very clever and imaginative way to address the prompt and the picture. I like the two different people in the that are drawn into the face. And you know, it almost appears as a mask, or it was kind of reminded me of Phantom of the Opera in a mask that was worn there. But yeah, I thought it was a clever and an interesting poem and very enjoyable and a very nice read there.
Thank you, Randy. And Bobby, what did you think?
I thought this was an interesting write in that it is a write that definitely is approached from the artist's point of view of Oleg Shupriak's imagination is a gift. Few can imitate, many cannot comprehend. An artist myself, I'm amazed by his technique, light, dark, yin-yang, and a little extra to keep his viewer on her toes. It was difficult to choose a favorite. They are phenomenal paintings. This is an artist speaking about another artist, which I find a very interesting approach to this, in that most of us just are like the people in the museum who stand in front of it, and we either like it or we don't. But here's someone who is evaluating technique and what they are seeing from a tutored eye, from an educated palate. And I really appreciate the way she's come about it, and just with three very simple stanzas: the unassuming, humble guitar player, and the word image bringing this painting up to perfection. Again, she speaks not of what she sees, but of how she appreciates the execution of the piece of work and the artist's skill. And I think it's a very fine approach.
And finally, Mika, what were your thoughts on the poem? Mika, are you there?
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I stepped away for a second. Did you call on me?
Oh, that's all right. Yeah. I did, but I can jump onto the next poem if you like and pick you up there.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Neutron.
That's all right. All right, so next we've got Poetic Picasso, and I'll give this one a read. And it's called Insurrection of the Zealots, multitudinous states engulfed within dissension and conflict, carnage and hostility discerned by heinous arms that afflict xenophobia, homophobia, misogyny, and racism dispersed, the constitution and proclamations of a government reversed, the myriad of iconoclast acolytes dethroned the presidency, pandemonium, ruination, mutiny, and the state of emergency, the corrupted thanatopus of extreme exegetes of the Decalogue, advocating a Neolithic pantheism of an apocryphal demagogue, doxological fervor of the neophytes and ecclesiastics imposed, volumes and tomes of poetry, science, and philosophy disposed, cafes, bars, theaters, prostitutes all annihilated and incinerated, legions of apostles and enforcers extorting animas degenerated. An amorphous epiphany obsessed the plebeians and epicureans, the achromatic avenues infested with evangelists and praetorians. Amidst the macabre machinations of the Machiavellian malevolence in an internal an innocuous utopia of meritorious inconsequence, exodus and exile of the infidels of the Saracens and the Israelites onto an interminable train of igneous inferno with the Sodomites, usurped, exploited fortune conferred to parvenus and neonates, where the oppressed languish in the tracks of virulent odinates, the heterogeneous and unorthodox society of America restrained, through a compulsive genocide and didactic fanaticism maintained, the metamorphosis altered of the once glorious nation's formation by the sycophantic insurrection of the zealots and their damnation. End poem. Wow, that was a lot of $5 words there, Poetic Picasso.
Aren't you sorry you said you were going to read it? You should have left that one to me.
I was thinking that when I started it, actually. Catherine, I'll get you to read. I'll get you to make the first comment.
You know, those big words don't frighten me.
And what did you think of the poem there, Captain?
Should I go ahead and kick off the comments now that I've intruded?
Yes, please.
I thought this piece. I think it's appropriate to say that this piece is a sesquipedalian's delight. And where the tongue vaults from one polysyllabic term to another, be it noun, verb, adverb, or adjective. I mean, this is quite the tour de force of vocabulary. And it's not simply show. It's correct. It's constructed very, you can see there's a great deal of care in how this piece is assembled. which noun gets pushed against which adverb, or verb, I should say, which verb and which adjective. And this is not an easy piece to read, but certainly I believe it was quite the challenge to write. I'd probably singed the pages on his thesaurus doing this. I know I would have. But it's impressive in that it speaks insurrection of the zealots. I mean, this is storytelling at a very complex level. And you really have to have some foreknowledge of what's going on here to truly appreciate it. I mean, the amorphous epiphany obsessed the plebeians and Epicureans, the achromatic avenues infested with evangelists and praetorians. And this is very, and there's a lot of history buried in this as well. So this is a very deep, very layered piece. Very complex, and I think Frank was just showing off. No, seriously, I really do admire this. This was quite a piece of work. He probably had to take a nap after he was done.
I think I need to take a nap after that. But tell us, I thought it was fantastic. I really need to extend my vocabulary. That's what I've noticed. I struggled with some of the words, but when the show's finished, I'm actually going to go back and look up the words that I'm unsure about and reread the poem, because I think it always helps.
You better take a bag of lunch with you.
And what did you think, Randy? Randy, are you there or did you drop?
I think we frightened him away.
Oh, you got I scared him off. He had to drop. What did you think, Mika?
I was watching something earlier that was talking about how politics is replacing religion in people's lives, at least in the U.S., church attendance is really down, but that doesn't change the fact that, like, religious right talking points are big, and the evangelical right has a lot of sway over politics, and it was making basically it was asserting that politics is now like the new church and religion that these people are following. And that's what it reminded me of in this critique that I see in the final stanza by the sycophantic insurrection of the zealots and their damnation. The zealots, you know, could be, in the case of my country, the religious right trying to impose their morality on everyone but themselves. I thought it was interesting.
I think your comment is
spot
on there.
I like that comment.
Actually, like, it was spot
Rainbow
on.
Mika. Spot on.
Mika, you know what? Have you heard of QAnon and the rise of QAnon in America? I think that's just a perfect example of what you were saying there.
They attacked our Capitol building.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think what you said was in relation to, well, all of it really, but the political overtaking the religious zealots, and then you almost get this correlation of the two, as you said. And I think the poem really picked up on that. And with that, we'll move on to a poem by Greg Gall. I will just double check. There is no recording after my last little shenanigans. And Captain, would you like to give this one a read?
Certainly. I was still reflecting on the previous write, and I was thinking from what Mika said that Marx said that the religion was the opiate of the masses. Well, perhaps now politics is rapidly becoming the opiate of the masses. What kind of icons are they going to construct? That's what I want to know. Okay, let me call this up. All right, we have Randy, Mind to be Dashing. Okay. Randy Wanted to be Dashing by Greg Gull. Standing reverent in a dull cast mist, blazing my cheeks while prayers were said, so silent stood at Rand's memorial. My mind dashed to the self-drawn sketch he staged as the youthful rancourteur. Profile, pipe, wavy cinema, legend air, his final role being lowered by rope into an eternal earthen wall home. Flowers fell like words fall, droplets in air, completing his circle, our circle too. His Janie bowed, seated solitary, almost estranged by her own dreams, dashed, her beauty gone long ago, buried too, as the wedding take couple, 60 years passed, right up to the very day of their marriage, which proved a confection in itself. Rand was the one who always got the girl, perky, popular, blonde, homecoming queen. They spent lifetimes contriving their image, striving for the unattainable ideal, then crashing, having to pick up the pieces, not content, tortured by delusions. This is how my older brother's life ends, a cacophony of misadventures. He wanted to be called only Rand, not Randall and never Randy, just Rand. So then, I always called him Randy. It's what a younger brother must do to bring one down to earth. He was always up there. Chasing fate, dashing towards his destiny, daring too often, reality hits head on. His good looks, handsome physique, were no match for surging corporate expectations. While sinking, his wake tiptoed lots of boats. His marriage, his family, in a free fall. My piddling attempts to help were futile. Truth was, I never knew his inner mind. I guess I loved him, but I don't know. Was he simply the superior image or the vulnerable, suffering reality? So he flailed through his 88 years, disconsolate, in debt, and detached. His affections only came in a knot. Where were Randy's spiritual benefactors? Are we heirs of our actions, not wishes? Can we dream, but not make dreams our masters? So what about my own selfish frailties? I take no pride in this awful life's play. My failures were many, and to think now I lost a life so close that I watched for so long evolve and did so little will be with me forever. This is my fate, not dashing towards the ones I love most. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great read. I think my favorite part was, truth was, I never knew his inner mind. I guess I loved him, but I don't know. Was he simply the superior image or the vulnerable, suffering reality? The questions that Greg Gore was asked here are very relatable. Smoke and mirrors, cloak and daggers. The last of this line of this stanza resonated in one of my own personal relationships, which I've mentioned previously. Almost as if affection was shown as a reward for a task completed, and there was always a condition placed on affection. But I think aside from that, it's a very vulnerable right. Like obviously at the beginning, you get the, they spent lifetimes contriving their image, striving for the unattainable ideal. But then you follow on with then crashing, having to pick up the pieces, not content, tortured by delusion. So it's a multi-layered right. And as an aside, that regret and lament is heartbreaking as we desperately want to do over, but it is but too late. So keep going. Greg, very good right. And Mika, what did you think?
Oh, man, I just thought it was so intense. The complicated nature of family relationships is really hard, I think, to put effectively into words. But the way that he does it is just very, very fitting. Especially at a funeral, that's what I was reading in Flowers Spell, like words fall, droplets in air, completing his circle, our circle too. There's just something very dour about it, but not dour in the way that it's just negative, but dour in the way that this is a pain that almost everyone has to go through, coming to terms with someone that they love, but also had issues with after their death.
Great comment, Mika. And what did you think, Captain?
I was just studying the author's note, and I was looking at the prompts that he selected, and he said he selected prompt 7, which is the Oleg Shupliak self-portrait, and also 13, and that is the oh, my goodness, it's Hitler. With a dragon for a mustache. But he also writes in his author's note, and others credited to Joseph Goldstein, meditation practitioner, author advisor for his Heirs of Action comment, and Rudyard Kipling, famed poet for his Dreams Are Masters poetic line from If, the legendary poem. And then it says, ink, sketch, illustration by G. Gall. So our author is also the artist for the illustration that heads this piece, which I thought was quite profound, quite moving, in that he is rendered his brother in ink and pen and put it at the head. I think this is a very raw, very real, very visceral write that poses unanswered questions that seek resolution by the living. So what about my own selfish frailties? I take no pride in this awful life's play. My failures were many, and to think now I lost a life so close that I watched for so long devolve and did so little will be with me forever, this my fate. The ache of the unresolved questions and issues that will not be settled just resonates at the end of this very evocative ink. I think this is a magnificent piece.
Thank you, Captain. I just had to check I wasn't on mute. next we've got a recording in the studio by Star BG. And Mika, if you can put that up, that'd be greatly appreciated. Captain, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am, I sure can.
Okay, cool. All right, I'll bring up another poem in the meantime. Won't be a moment. And
okay.
Captain, what contest have we got going at the moment? We've got the Dorian Gray contest. With I think there's about seven spots left.
Teresa. And
Mother
Teresa. But we have Mother Teresa also.
Oh, Mother Teresa, that's it. Yes, yes.
Quite the dichotomy.
And I think that's
Dorian Gray. Dorian Gray on one hand and Mother Teresa on the other.
And you know what? It wasn't actually on purpose. It just worked out that way, I think. So
Yeah. I got a nickel for every time I heard that one. I thought you did it deliberately. Just run with it.
Yeah, I'll take credit where credit isn't due. It's all good.
What the hell? You know, that'll replace one of the times where you could have gotten credit and didn't. There you go.
Yeah.
All sorts of.
All right.
All sorts
Captain,
of stuff.
I'll get you to read the next one.
Okay. Is that Sonnet 18?
That's the one.
Okie dokie. And we have, as our prompt, the picture, the painting of the bard, the immortal bard. And hidden in there is obviously Otello and Desdemona. Okay, and this is by Eric Svensson. Stratford upon Avon dreams a haven. General Juliet astral travels, projects her future fate into receptive mind. Quill quivers, inkwell spills. Hair billows like theater curtains. All the world is stage. Mouth becomes a pedestal. Words writ to wit, to woe. Turbaned fakir spies. Light bulb, thoughts globed a theater. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. O beloved Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, planks and poles laid to assuage your fear. Trick-or-treat, bard, never will thee become obsolete. Human nature, thy prefecture, word colts bolted, smashed royal stockades, caution thrown to discordant winds. Ukrainian Oleg Shupliak plies paint, works reality as the bard did with words. Sleight of hand, trick, sleight of mind, trick of hands, optical illusions, assault the senses. What's learned by rote, smite ingenuity. Butcher, baker, nightmare maker. Protagonist, painter, poses a theory, bard's brain landscaped, a theater. Equerry, intention, set energy in motion. Planks and poles provided surround sound glow. Fips the bard, I have heard of your paintings too well enough. God has given you one face, and you make yourselves another. You jig, you amble, and you lisp, and nickname God's creatures, and make your wantonness your ignorance. Contortionist painter Oleg Shupliak, soldier on. Advance optical illusion palettes upon staid, stuck minds. Each painting a greater reflection of the self. Mortal men and women betrothed to more than meets the eye. Heart and particle, not separate from nature, are we your subject? End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a very good read. I found the poem to be quite an immersive take on the prompt, in that it takes the ekphrasis side of things and the storytelling and interweaves the two. And I love the interspersing of the quote from Hamlet, which was a great inclusion and rings true to the concept of Oleg Shupliak's paintings. He paints with fresh eyes, and I think that Eric's poem extends that breath of fresh air. My favorite part was Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker, Protagonist, Painter, Poses, a Theory, Bard's Brain, Landscape, the Theater, Equerry, Intention, Set, Energy, in Motion, Planks and Poles Provided, Surround, Sound, Globe. The internal rhyme in that was great, but there was also, I think, an allusion to Butcher Baker, Candlestick Maker, which was great also. Very well done. And what did you think, Captain?
Oh, I thought this was a bloody brilliant write. It is so complex. It takes another look at the painting itself and really, like you said, with ekphrasis, really does a detailed interpretation of all the elements that are depicted in this complex painting. It omits no detail. Curtains like flowing hair. He says hair billows like theater curtains, which that's what the hair is. That it's depicted by theater curtains, and you see on his forehead the light in the background, which is the theater. The color is his stage. He's got a woman across his face, which could be Desdemona or could be Juliet. But it definitely suggests the bard's plays, and there's such a complexity to this painting that is definitely delineated in this very complex, very dense rite. Trick or treat, bard, never will thee become obsolete. Human nature, thy prefecture. The boy, that is no truer words. And I also favored the stanza you called out, Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker. Very clever play on words there. Bard's brain landscaped a theater, which is exactly what he's done in the painting. Equity and tension set energy in motion. This is, I think, like I said at the beginning, it's a bloody brilliant rite. I think he's done a marvelous job and a spot-on interpretation of the prompt.
Great comment, Captain. And Mika, are you there with us? I'm going to continue on just in case we're having technical difficulties with the next poem, and I'll give this one a read. And hopefully we hear
I don't see any missives or notes on the board from
thinking maybe she's just stepped away for a bit. That's all right. We'll keep going with the next poem. So this one's by Faziana, and it's called Oleg Shupliak's Farm. The man becomes his farm. The farm lived through him. It was who he was, animals a part of him. The barn windows framed his view of the world. The trees absorbed the sounds and smells. The vegetation gave him his colour. Contoured by well-worn work paths, his head always in the clouds. Even graying moustache kept his youthful self, home entrenched in his identity. The farm was the man. The man was the farm. End poem. And what did you think, Captain?
I really liked it. I enjoy Faziana's writing because she has such a unique eye. She sees things on a different slant. Many things that I would have viewed differently. But I love the way she's brought it full circle. The man became his farm. The farm lived through him. And that is exactly what the painting suggests. You look at the elements within the painting, and there would be no farm without the man's face, nor would there be a face without the farm. The barn windows framed his view of the world. Trees absorbed the sounds and smells. Vegetation gave him his color. She has described this piece so beautifully. His head always in the clouds. Even graying mustache kept his youthful self. And then she concludes, the farm was the man was the farm. I think this is elegant in its simplicity. This is a wonderful brevity, and she's done a marvelous job with it.
Thank you, Captain. I really agree with you there. For me, the opening phrase, and then it's somewhat got the repetition at the end. The man became his farm. The farm lived through him. It was who he was. And then it ends with the farm was the man. The man was the farm. For me, it reminds me of a documentary called Backroads on the ABC, which chronicles regional areas in Australia. So it's a show that we've got back here. And it also highlights the community spirit. And it really reminds me of the principle that farm life is not a job but a calling. And that even though the farming communities in Australia and probably elsewhere in the world have faced a lot of trials and tribulations, they've faced them as a community with an enduring spirit. And I really think that Faziana's poem captures that essence and also the essence of the Oleg Shupliak artwork. My favourite part, however, was that section that says, contoured by well-worn work paths, his head always in the clouds. I don't know. There's something about that line there because it's not necessarily a visceral rite, but it's very farm work isn't easy. So to have his head always up in the clouds, I think, is a nice line. And it works well with the artwork too. So it's ecfractic, but also leaves it to the imagination that he is not just his job. So very well done.
Yes, yes. A very, very astute comment. I really liked what you had to say about this.
All right. Well, we'll move on to, I'll just, I've sent Mika a message, so I'll just wait to see what happens there, but we'll continue with the show until we run out of poetry and we should be fine, actually, though. We've got quite a few writes to get through, so that I'm not concerned about. I'm just not sure.
Going to run dry anytime soon.
No. So, if we don't get your SoundCloud up this time, normally it's not an issue, but if we have an issue with it, we'll get your poem read today anyway. And I think sometimes it's better to push on when you've got technical difficulties than to finish early. So, with that, I will get Star BG's poem up now. And I'll give this one a read. Okay.
Ready?
So it's called Oh, I See Myself. Look at me. I'm submerged in a master's vision who captured me in dreamscape reality. A wanderer who sits for a short time feeling breeze to contemplate soul's life. Moments linger as sun quenches mind and strokes of brush become facade to hide woes. Eyes pierce master's canvas, telling story of the many lands traveled with little company. Deep inhale rolls to outtake, traveling into many lines of breeze, as quiet gives chance to land inside deep visions. I'd be blessed to view with a backpack of memories, transplanted into a simple moment captured by the artist. Have we met before? Did I sit to have him paint with oils my song? I think not. For his eyes were focused on another. But he etched with paints of golds and oranges, with precision of marksmanship, shadowing self well. Perhaps destiny played role to awaken with spark of one named Vincent who mirrors my journey. Perhaps he knew how misunderstood another viewer could be, where turning to open road to wander with poetic canvas was my only option. Now moments of gratitude fall from breath, to praise Oleg Shipriak's vision, a vision bringing me home to past life so I wouldn't feel so alone, end poem. And what were your thoughts, Captain?
I've been reading Star BG's work for a while now, and I have noticed it. She's maturing as a poet, and her work is taking on a complexity that is very impressive. And this is probably one of the most complex pieces I've seen from him, or from her, I should say, excuse me. I'm saying him because I'm looking at the picture. Look at me. I'm submerged in a master's vision who captured me in dreamscape reality, a wanderer who sits for a short time feeling breeze to contemplate soul's life. I mean, and I can't really isolate any particular stanza in this, because this is such a wonderful assemblage of her interpretation of not only of the painting, but she's done it on a first-person basis. It is quite remarkable. Perhaps he knew how misunderstood another viewer could be, where turning to open road to wander with poetic canvas was my only option. She's basically integrated herself into this piece with such skill. Now moments of gratitude fall from breath to praise Oleg Shipriak's vision, a vision bringing me home to past life so I wouldn't feel so alone. This is a really impressive piece of work, and I commend Star BG on this piece. This is quite remarkable.
Yeah, I think this is a contender for one of the finalists, to be honest.
Absolutely.
I was really impressed with it. And I think you're right there. StarBG has been improving steadily through our contests and also the contest on Late Night Poets for other hosts. And just quietly, I think she has captured the essence of the Vincent artwork here. And she actually references in her comment back to me that she has been compared to Vincent because of being misunderstood. And I think that actually shines through with the poem, that identification with Vincent on an emotional and spiritual level, because it wasn't just a case of Ekphraxis. She's given it another dimension. And so I thought it was a very strong write with personal lens. And I think my favourite part was perhaps he knew how misunderstood another viewer could be, where turning to open road to wander with poetic canvas was my only option. Poetic canvas was just fantastic, just the two-word combination there. And I think she should continue to wander with poetic canvas, and you can only improve. And we've seen exactly that from your right at the beginning to now.
I agree, and you said that much better than I did. I was your term personal lens, I thought, quite accurate, because it does come through a personal filter. And you can tell that there is her emotion is definitely woven into this piece. It is unmistakable, but I think you did a much better job of commenting on it than I did.
And thank you. I think really with these shows, it's very rare that you come across people just in general with late night poets. It's not so rare, but that you come across people that you can have an intellectual and emotional conversation with, and then also the poets that get involved in the shows. Without them, we wouldn't have a show. So
without a doubt,
yeah,
they are definitely the catalyst. Yeah, they are definitely the catalyst.
Yeah. And would you be able to read I Love Poems' English version of the poem that I've just posted, Captain?
You don't want me to butcher the French version?
Well, I'll tell you, just quietly, it'd be better than my butchered version. I can tell you that now, but we'll just stick to the English for now.
I would, as my friend said, I would be more than coiled. I don't know what that means, but he says it. Okay. His Muse by I Love Poems. He sings to her to relieve his own emotions. My muse, you are a rebellious bird. I love you. I love you. Oh, comfort my heart on times where my eyes dream of you, even when you don't see me and I remain. He takes his flute. Teach me a new language. So lights of the heavens spark at her. So thousand roses lift her up, so her wings fly her to me, so my voice enchants her. Face to face, I look at her eyes. I feel her sweetness. I take her in my arms. Her chastity makes me tremble. We dance and dance. It was just a dream. End poem.
Thank you, Captain. That was a lovely read. I think you'll agree with me. It's always good to hear Sour's SoundClouds, but in the absence of that, I'm glad you gave it a read. I love the ethereal romanticism of this piece and that dance with the muse between a concrete being at the beginning of the poem to a dreamscape-like apparition as the poem progresses. And I think Sour gave life to the artwork, capturing the steadfast innocence of the muse and her pursuance by the main protagonist in the foreground. Very inspiring. And what did you think, Captain?
I agree. The selected prompt, it does have an almost spectral quality to the the figure in the background and the figure in the foreground clearly playing the flute. You don't know whether he's playing for himself or for an audience, the figure in the background, or if he simply imagines the figure in the background. This is a quite intriguing interpretation of the artwork, but I think it's, like you said, very ethereal, as is most of Zola's work. She has a delicacy about her work that, as I've likened it to looking at lace, because you can look at it and you can look through it, and it is so so delicate in the way she writes.
Definitely agree with you there. Fine Irish linen lace or Chantilly lace, or that's the extent of my lace knowledge. So.
That's enough. It's good. You got the concept.
Yes. So next, I'll give this poem a read by T. Michelle, and it's called To Dust. Streaks of low light are let in where once grew ornamental pears. I've grown from foresight to muddled thoughts. I drew a sword from its immaculate scabbard and threw it without caution. Stainless once was my passion, clear like the lake of the valley watched by its trichrome pergola. Innocent, childish, and always hungry for people, for life, but mostly for knowledge. I bartered the future like a squalid sin offering. You call it suffering. I call it truce, this ashen face, cloudy like silver milk. What is this perjury that rinses me of my grievance? Rusty trinkets purchased from a flea market, wearer, so delicate, her enamored bonnet, so grand and fair. I was lovesick, no, not with a drunkard's passion for wine, but like a bartender devotion to the smell of liquor, the musty fragrance of varnish on a long wet table. Once upon a tallow tree, a swallow caught its breath. By the Tyndall kingfishers, a lute is broken in three. In this dream of magnificent green, squashed hazelnuts become sour like brined salted pickles. Oh, what a beautiful way to die. End poem. And what were your thoughts on this, Captain?
I was looking at the artwork as you were reading. And this one was not an easy to use as inspiration. I'm not familiar with T. Michelle's work, but I definitely think I need to go to their page and look at what else they've done, because this is quite a remarkable piece of work. Streaks of low light are let in where once grew ornamental pears. I've grown from foresight to muddled thought. That is such a clever opening in description of the artwork, because you can see where the face could be in the foreground, but then it looks like it may be just something that the figure in the foreground is thinking of. I drew a sword from its immaculate scabbard and threw it without caution. The whole read. From start to finish, is wonderful storytelling. It's a very skilled use of language. I call it truce, this ashen face, cloudy like silver milk. And that's, you know, again, I look back to the picture, and that is a very apt and artful description. What is this perjury that rinses me of my grievance? This is going to go in my favorites. And I think I'm definitely going to explore this writer's work, because this is a very complex piece, and it's a very intriguing storytelling. And I think it's a very complex and layered description of the chosen prompt. So I'm very impressed with this piece.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. And I was reading the author notes, and he's actually written to three prompts. So I have a feeling that prompt 4, 8, and 31. So the poem itself almost lends itself to a vignette style, the way it flips from one strong image to the next. And it's almost like a stream of consciousness in that respect. And I really enjoyed T. Michelle's answer to the prompts. And as we've mentioned before, it's hard enough to address one prompt, let alone a selection of prompts.
Yes.
And he or she, I'm not sure, have tackled and weaved a diverse right here. And my favorite part was when it turned on a dime with once upon a tallow tree, a swallow caught its breath. By the Tyndall, Kingfisher's a lute is broken in three. Just a very clever piece. So, thank
it
you
is.
For the write.
Definitely going to go on my personal favorites. And you look through it, and it's one of those pieces where, as you look at it, you find other things, like rusty trinkets purchased from a flea market. Its wearer was so delicate, her enamored bonnet so grand and fair. I was lovesick. No, not in a drunkard's passion for wine, but like a bartending devotion to the smell of liquor, the musty fragrance of vanish on a long, wet table. I mean, that is the visual imagery and the description in this is so so detailed that evokes a sensory participation in what's written here. I mean, it's smell of liquor, musty fragrance of varnish on a long, wet table. I'm just really impressed with this piece. I think this is also a contender.
I agree wholeheartedly. And with that, we'll move on to the next poem because we've got about six more to get through in the next 40 minutes, maybe more. So I'll get you to read this one by Gerald E. Green. And when you're ready.
Ma'am. Okay. Calling it up now. Okay. Stranger by Gerald E. Green. He called himself a messenger, a simple messenger, he said, with movements slow and purposeful. He carried himself with authority. His cloak was dark and his beard was white, his wrinkled hands thin, reflecting years beyond mine. I followed him, not knowing why, for 3 days in late summer when my haying was done. He spoke of the prophet and contentment, resonating with my anxious demeanor. Enamored was I at his steady pace and carefree approach to sustenance. No request for food or place to sleep came from his lips to followers, but only words of hope and eager ears engaged him with newfound disciples like myself. I pondered how a man could be so calm while having no security and listened carefully to what he taught and how he never spoke of himself. He'd leave the town in sundown's hour, returning when the sun was high, and spend a part of every day with those who listened, those who learned. Before he left, I saw the apostle, the one who died many centuries hence. His face emerged from a simple scene as the messenger spoke to my daughter-in-law. And since that summer, the village changed. Serenity settled and stayed a while. Because of that messenger, that simple messenger, who shared what he knew from a book we all owned. End poem.
Very good read, Captain. I thought very measured, which is what the poem really needed. And I enjoyed how the author worked the foreground and the background of Shupliak's artwork into a tapestry of storytelling. And it was a deeply moving ride. My favorite part was no request for food or place to sleep came from his lips to followers, but only words of hope and eager ears engaged him with a newfound disciple like myself. I pondered how a man could be so calm while having no security. My personal thoughts, maybe it was the humble nature of the messenger, or maybe it was his innate faith that the prophet would provide. I think there is something in this for all of us, a very wise, reverential piece for believers and non-believers alike. Very well done. And what were your thoughts, Captain?
Oh, I agree. It was very well done. And as you study the artwork itself, the different elements that he's written to play out. And at first you don't see the messenger. You see the woman, and then all of a sudden you realize that there is a figure over her shoulder to her left. And you see he calls himself a messenger, a simple messenger with movements slow and purposeful. He carried himself with authority. Goes on to describe him, but then he gives him just he spoke of the prophet, and yet in his descriptions throughout the piece, which I thought was just superb storytelling. I mean, you're drawn into it stanza by stanza. The figure itself takes on the nature of a prophet. He'd leave the town in sundown's hour, returning when the sun was high, and spend a part of every day to those who listened, those who learned. It sounds like this wandering messenger was himself a prophet, but did not want to cloak himself in that clothing. Just wanted to deliver a message and move on. And like I said, I think this is superb storytelling, and the way he concludes it is with the profound impact that this individual had on the village. Since that summer, the village changed, serenity settled, and stayed a while because of that messenger, that simple messenger, who shared what we knew from a book we all owned. I think the reference in that last line, while intuitively obvious, is very diplomatically put forth. I really like the way he phrased that.
Yeah, because it didn't kind of smash a particular book,
yes,
or reference,
right,
in that last line. So it left it open for your own beliefs, or whether you're not even a believer, you know, it could be a philosophical book. But
yes,
I really enjoyed that part too.
I really did like, yeah, that was so artful, and it did, because it also, like you said, it engages the reader, it involves the reader, it makes the reader ask themselves, you know, what it's like the it reminded me in that instance from H.G. Wells' Time Machine, where the character Herbert George George comes back to his cottage, and his best friend tries to stop him from leaving again, but he knows he's going to leave, and he looks around and he sees that the only thing that his friend has taken with him back to the future are three books. And he asks the housekeeper, "Do you know what books those are?" She says, "No, I can't remember." And it leaves it as an exercise to the reader of what would you take with you. And it's like, what book do we all own would he be referencing in this piece? So I think that is a very clever way to write that.
Excellent comment there. And we'll move on to the next poem by Kels Miles, and it's called Imagine a Dreamer. Sweeter melodies than this of a dreamer's glorious gift. Imagine a world harmonious where freedom could exist. But he's not the only dreamer. Our lives started with the Creator, whose dreams were the equator of every life form in nature. Imagination flies on artistic wings. Poets, painters, lyrics, but an illusion that sings, faced with grace and living things. Beauty is found in yin and yang, balanced with the good and bad. Perfection's purity is days of staying. Utopian society is in demand. Words for a peaceful, loving world. Maybe a dreamer's song is heard. Maybe a painter's face is buried. Imagine if all was rendered clearer. End poem. And
great read.
What did you think about this poem?
Thank you.
And what were your thoughts about
very, especially with the internal rhyming that she dances in and out of, which I think is quite skilled. This is, I think, a spot-on interpretation, excuse me, of the prompt where Lennon's face, or where John Lennon's face is in the painting. Sweeter melodies than this of a dreamer's glorious gifts. Imagine a world harmonious where freedom could exist. It makes direct reference, I think, to song the song that John Lennon made famous. What is it? Imagine. And she's got it right there. Imagine a world. Very clever way she's woven that in there. I think this is a beautiful homage to Lennon and a beautiful interpretation of the prompt. This is a wonderful example of a crisis.
Thank you, Captain. That was a great comment. I think my favorite part was imagination flies on artistic wings, poets, painters, lyrics that sing, aspirations and illusion that stings, faced with grace in living things. I enjoyed the rhyming theme employed in this poem and also the resounding message of hope. Although personally, and this is a personal opinion, I question whether we strive for a utopian society universally with so many people out there serving their own agendas. A very aspirational and spiritual right.
But I think your comment, I think your comment goes to a line from I think Omar Khayyam. If you give me a moment, I think I can recall it.
Certainly.
Hang on a second here. I'm trying to call it up here. Here we go. Okay. It is by Omar Khayyam. Ascend my soul through the after, through the invisible. Whoops, come on. Stop that. Wouldn't you know? Just advertise. There we go. He wanted me to sign up or something. Omar Khayyam, quote, ascend my soul through the invisible, some letter of that afterlife to spell, and by my soul returned to me and answered, I myself am heaven and hell. And I think you reference it at the end of the comment about people having their own agendas. I think so often we forget that we can we are the authors of our own heaven or hell. As the 94-year-old woman said when she was interviewed about her longevity, she quoted, she says, every morning I wake up, I realize I have two choices. I can choose to be happy or I can choose to be unhappy. And I decided a long time ago to choose to be happy.
Excellent commentary there, Captain. And thank you for bringing that quote up. I wasn't actually sure who had said it. I've heard it before. I wasn't entirely sure of the origin, I suppose. So next by Nan. If you want to post it, that would be great.
Sure.
If you can read Nan's 529 poll.
Yeah, I can do that.
I don't even need
a reason. You're breaking up a little bit, or maybe the way I'm hearing. Okay. Nan 529er. No one ever sees my face. Painter paints as if he's in a trance, brush strokes revealing a face. Each night within restless sleep, terror begins, tossing, turning, breaking out into a sweat. Phantom of death looms over him with a smile on its face. Day after day, there's no escape. It's always the same. Haunting his work over and over again, the face remains. He tries to sketch without any rest. Still, it haunts his work again and again. Throwing away his paints, canvas, and easel, taking clay, he begins to mold the clay with his hands. Looking down in disbelief, the skull of death stares right up at him. Picking up the head, he throws it against the wall. Hands and head, he screams, "I give up." Behind him, a presence. He feels bones of a hand on his back. Shivering, he whispers to death, "Why do you haunt me?" Death laughs, "Because I'm death. You're my artist, Oleg. Without you, no one would ever see my face." End poem.
Fantastic read there, Captain, and thanks, Nan, for the poem. I was really impressed with how Nan interpreted the prompt. I think she captured the almost obsessional nature of faces in Oleg Shuklyak's work, whether knowingly or unknowingly. She's highlighted the thematic strengths amongst his work by choosing this prompt in a somewhat harrowing story, one of which at least metaphorically represents the struggle of the artist to break free of artistic interpretation. By that I mean he lives and breathes his art throughout his portraiture work. And that surely was or is groundbreaking and painstakingly created. And I dare say the only way he could stop was through death touching his shoulder with bony hands. And now what did you think, Captain?
Oh, my goodness. I thought this was an absolutely inspired, bloody brilliant interpretation of the prompt. The face of death being
Captain,
the mute. Yeah, I am. Can you hear me? Hello? 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 Can you hear me? Hello? Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Can you hear me? Testing. Testing one.
All right. It looks like we've lost Captain.
Oh,
so
dear.
I will... Are you here? Okay, good, good, good. Okay, that's good. Were you on mute or did it just drop? I can't hear you again, Captain. All right, I'll move on to the next poem. And that will be by Les J. Kelly, and I'll give this one a read. Hopefully we're not talking over each other on the recording. It goes like this. It's by S.J. Kelly, and it's called Exclamation Rock. The Therapy Room. Hello, how's everyone today? Okay, well, come on in. Find a place to sit. In a moment, we'll start writing wrongs. Some of us have yet to admit 4 or 5. There should be 6. While we wait for our late arrival, please talk amongst yourselves as if I don't exist. Second thought. Let's jump right into this. Who would like to go first? Anyone? Anyone? Okay, I guess I'll start. I could be mistakenly ignored, but now this beast is tamed in public. We are all aware that's not the case behind closed doors. There's dirt on your hands, yes, even yours, as you cast your wares upon him. Stares. He stares straight at the floor. Look at me. You'll never break the mold they cast you in, willing to settle for what's in store. Now, with that said, I understand he's far from innocent, yet solely guilty of these incidents. Your actions caused during his innocence, can we all agree? Seems a bit ridiculous. And again, what do I know? Just ask your therapist. That's the key of the show. Why are you getting up? Do you think by leaving I'll just go? Hello? You can't ignore me forever. Take that as a promise, not a threat. And I never break my promises, known I never forget. So until you're ready to reminisce, we'll all be here together, alone in this abyss. Your friend until the end. I am the elephant in the poem. And Captain, are you there? All right. Well, I will give my comments. And I like the narration between the main protagonist and the group therapy attendees, and the play on an elephant never forgets. And I thought it was very clever, although the therapy room is probably a place for vigilantism. That's my only, other comment there. And with that, we'll move on to the next poem. And this one is by Ritul Banerjee. Captain, if you can hear me, you can hear me, okay. I think you might be on mute, perhaps. So I'll keep going with the show, but Captain is listening, and we'll just continue until I run out of poems, and I'll refer to Captain from the background on the board. So just I can't take you off mute. That's the only thing. So this poem is called Fields of Gold by Ritul Banerjee. And it goes, fields of gold, seas in the flamboyance of endless sunflowers swaying gently in the wind. Every time the west wind rises and the waves in rhythm and synchronization sediments the flowers dancing in unison. Here I have left behind my childhood memories, and I often delve into it, the winds of nostalgia, should I retrieve back all that was yesterday's flying on imagination's wings. I can still feel, I can still see, that's me, the child's replica walking through the fields, unfettered. Was that existence now just a deceased past? But wait, I can still hear the whistle of the train passing by at a distance. I become energetic. Wish I could get back that me that was once. In the setting sun, the past or yesterday's sky, the crimson magic slipped beside cerulean. And these sunflowers, do you know, are the brilliant procreation of Van Gogh's art. Imagining still and dreams, still breathe in, faded out whispers. With the attitude in the splendid solar manifestation, the spontaneity of the flowers. Vincent van Gogh, the intriguing artist, and I somewhat can connect my sad life to him. Should I die the sooner, must I die in grace? Still dancing on high heels, still laughing through the mask of unseen tears. Because I really don't want to be sad. When I die, I still live. Should I find me amidst the fields of gold, the child replica that once was, but sunflower shall be forever. The undying or immortal spirit of the artist, and the ever-watchful eyes of Van Gogh are larger than life, an enigmatic purpose just that genius never died, the creative juices, constraints, and the poem. Okay. Now, just checking the board to see whether anyone's there. I think Captain's still there, but we can't get her online. We're sorry for the technical difficulties today, but I will make comment on this poem. It was quite a vivid poem, sensory even, with a sense of nostalgia through the lens of Van Gogh. It actually struck me as a metaphoric death of innocence with the sunflowers as a backdrop. The correlations to Van Gogh in the artistic endeavours, whether that be writing, painting or other creative pursuits as a response to trauma, great or small pursuits or real, were very well done. It reminds me of a quote by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. which intimates there are worse fates than death, and in my eyes losing that spark or losing hope, merely existing, is one of them. So I feel that the tool should keep writing, feeling and processing it was very well written. Okay, so we've got two more poems and I think then we're going to call it a day because this has been a very interesting show. So, Captain, I still can't hear you. So I'll keep going for the next two poems, and then we will call it a day. So this poem's by Truthchill, and it's called Perceptual Illusion. If you combine perception and illusion, the result would be what I have taught myself to contain a sense of sanity, perceptual illusion. Mr. Shupliak has taught us a way to look beyond self into an induced reality, to search out through his works of artistic beauty how beautiful insanity could be. Senses, like other parts of our anatomy through time, are diminished, for some slightly and others immensely. The lines between reality and what used to be are contaminated by what others say should be. Discontinuing the natural order of things for a replacement of codependency. See, a brain that's stimulated can heal a person's thinking, restore their sense of being, remind them why colours matter, and guard them from misleading chatter that would have them believe whatever disease can contaminate their memories. So thank you, Oleg, for following your dreams and not letting opposition get the best of you in your poem. Now, I have to say to Truthchill, it was such an enlightening review of Oleg Sutjak's work, and he certainly broke the traditional laws of portrait painting. And as Truthchill put it so eloquently, he taught us a way to look beyond self and into an induced reality, to search out through his works of artistic beauty how beautiful insanity could be. On a personal note, I'm glad to see that Maria is stopping by for our contest again. And here's to rising above contaminated memories and moving onwards and upwards. Very enjoyable. And then finally we have one more poem. And then I'm going to have to figure out whether the recording needs to be stopped. And I'll quickly run through the contest. And thank you, Captain, for persisting on the board. So I don't feel so alone. Lucky I've got the gift of the gab and word count. So this last poem is by Sleeping Lion, and it's called The Puppet and the Puppeteer. The person I appear to be is just a mask through which I see. I see, I see, I see, I see, for there are many parts of me. And still I think I am the one, the face that is relied upon to say, yes, this is me alone. I am the one who must atone. Now this explains the reason why the devil makes the angel cry, regret would never come to me if I were just one entity, to be united, to be whole. I know now this must be my goal, to bring the crowd controlling me into a wholesome unity. In every facet of myself, there is a multitude whose self would take command to have its way and pull my strings within the play. The place, the thing, my life, in fact, and every day becomes...